Thank you so much for allowing me to speak here today. I'm honored to be here. This is the 10th sermon that I've ever written, but the first one I've ever delivered outside of my home base. So thank you so much for the warm hospitality you've shown me today. As a layperson who doesn't write and deliver them on a regular basis, I must say that they are both challenging and rewarding. I always come away afterwards having discovered things about my topic and about myself that I didn't know before. I also have to say that I'm a little more nervous than usual delivering this sermon. When I was asked by Reverend Don to speak to you today, I was really excited about it until I realized it was on Mother's Day. This service is notoriously difficult to pull off well, even by seasoned ministers. And the fact that I'm a dad and not a mom made me wonder if I could do it justice. But then again, I thought, why not? I know a few moms. I have a mom. I'm married to a mom. And I dare say I've mothered a little here and there myself. So I have a few insights. And I hope that if nothing else, I'll give you something to think about with you and your family. First of all, we do need to acknowledge that despite the flowers and chocolate and breakfast in bed that this day is known for, that it is a difficult day for many people. This day may bring up complicated and challenging emotions. There are people who are angry at their moms and people who are very appreciative of them. There are moms who are proud and happy with their relationship with their children and moms who have difficult relationships with their children who may be feeling guilt or regret. There are mothers who lost their children and children who have lost their mothers. There are adopted children who are both appreciative of their adoptive moms and wonder about their birth moms. And there are would-be mothers who wish they could have children, as well as potential mothers who have no interest in having children at all. So this day is packed with so many different emotions depending on your story. So please let us be mindful of everyone's perspective on this day. Now, when I took on this sermon assignment, my parents were transitioning into a new stage of life. They had just moved into the local care center in their hometown in Iowa. My dad had gotten through a life-changing surgery, which required him to move from having an independent life at their home to a full-time care facility. And my mother, who has Alzheimer's, had my father, who was her primary caregiver, so while they were living at home. So now that he needed to be at the care center, she needed to be there as well. And I know some of you know the struggles of helping your parents with this kind of move. And it was a very big challenge for my brother and I, and it didn't go smoothly. It's difficult to parent our parents, right? So I thought about that as Reverend Don asked me to give the Mother's Day sermon. And I thought that maybe by giving that, I could reflect on my parents and parenting in general. And because I like balance and I'm a glutton for punishment, I volunteered to preach out on Father's Day at Emerson as well. So because I had agreed to do both services, I was thinking of this topic as a two-part sermon, motherhood and fatherhood together, yin and yang. I approach it as it was a mystery to solve, a wonder. The mystery of what it means to be a father and a mother. And it's been an interesting journey, and I was a little surprised by what I found at the end. So I hope it's okay if I take you along for the ride. First of all, let's talk about the kinds of mothers there are out there. There are the biological moms, of course, who go through conception, pregnancy, and birth. My hats are off to you women for that very beautiful physical miracle. It really is truly wonderful. And then there are the moms who care for a child from birth through adulthood, whether 5 through 50, it never ends. And those are the birth and adoptive moms. Then there are the other motherly people from families where there isn't a traditional mom. Such as single and double dad families. Then there are the surrogate moms and caretakers, like in an extended family, and the caregivers and nurturers in the community. So many different kinds of families out there and so many different kinds of mothers. And I learned that you don't have to be a traditional mother in order to mother. And because I'm not a mother, I wanted to really know what it meant to be one. What roles do they provide in the family? What traits do moms have? What do moms think of themselves, or what do moms think that it takes to be a mom? So I asked my wise Facebook friends, and all my friend moms joined in the chorus, and they gave me a wonderful list. And it included words like being warm, full of unconditional love, being wise, full of joy, being fun and playful and nurturing, being present. It involved teaching and listening, having persistence and patience, and being selfless and compassionate, and just being a very tough person in general to be able to handle being able to handle motherhood. So what a great list, and such a high standard to live up to. But those responses perplexed me, and I looked at each of those and I thought, but can't dads do those same things? Aren't they often expected to do those same things? And then I looked at the things that dads are supposed to do, like lead and discipline and be the authority figure and make decisions and give advice and provide for the family. And I saw that many moms do the same things. So once a baby is born, is motherhood and fatherhood all that different? I decided to look at the really big picture. I looked at the creation process, not the biological one. I know how that works. But looking at how humans create things, everything we make, it doesn't matter if it's having a baby, building a house, making dinner, creating a computer application, or even going on vacation, they all have birth stories. I went to school to be an engineer, and I work as a project manager. And many of my hobbies involve making things. So I think about the creation process a lot, probably too much. It's a great way to procrastinate from actually making things. But I bet you like to make things too, so that makes us all experts. So let's look at the creation process and see if you agree with me. So the creation of anything starts with an idea. It doesn't exist yet. It's all in your mind. And then you have to flesh out the idea. You have to explore how to create it and whether it's even feasible to do. And then there's a decision point, a go, no-go moment. But once you're past that, you need to get the materials or ingredients to make it. And you have to create a space to make it and also a space to keep it for afterwards. And then you have to carefully create or build or grow it. You protect it while it's fragile. And then at some miraculous point, you realize it's done. It's made. It's completed. Your creation exists. It's alive. The idea that which only existed in your head has become a physical reality. That's a huge moment, right? It's the birth of something that you created. But even after the creation is complete, the job isn't done. You still have to take care of it, protect it, fix it if it breaks. You might decide to make improvements to it. And maybe, eventually, you might have to let it go to someone else. So does that sound about right? Think about everything in your life that goes from thought to reality. You go through a similar process. Now I ask you, did you mother it into existence, or father it, or both? I once made a kayak out of wood and fiberglass. It took me 7 months from the moment I first dreamed of it to researching it, to buying the materials, to the actual construction, to the point where I first put it into the water to see if it floated. It was a painstaking process, which I loved. So yes, it was a labor of love. And yep, I birthed a boat. And I'm a very proud parent of it. I made that 2 years ago, and I love spending time with it. And I've done a few things to improve it since then, and I have to take care of it on a regular basis. And I'm very protective because it doesn't react very well to sharp rocks. So you could even say that I baby it. So does that sound a bit like parenting? So with making babies, the father and mother roles are pretty distinct. The male and female have very specific jobs to do. It requires two people of different genders. But it's not like that in other forms of creation. It still requires male and female energies, but not necessarily male and female individuals. I like to refer to the yin and yang symbol and the Taoist philosophy to describe it. You know that symbol, right? The circle that is made up of black and white regions that are separated with a kind of S-shaped boundary between them. There's a white dot in the black region and a black dot in the white region. It kind of looks like the white is flowing into the black and the black is flowing into the white. What it represents is the interconnection of opposing and complementary energies. Yin is thought of as the feminine energy and yang as the masculine. The idea is that there should be a recognition that everything in existence has a combination of both energies, even people, especially people. No matter what gender you identify as, you have both masculine and feminine energy inside you. Some people may have more masculine, and some people may have more feminine. And what you have more of is not necessarily related to what gender you are or what gender you're attracted to. The feminine traits related to female energy are compassion, introspection, flow, intuition, patience, receptivity, and creativity. And the male traits related to male energy are valor, assertion, direction, methodic thought, action, giving, and consciousness. Do those match your ideas of feminine masculine traits too? So when I look at my own personality, I notice that my traits are a mixture of both feminine and masculine. In fact, I think I'm about 50-50, which explains why I can be equally at ease in groups that are predominantly men or groups that are predominantly women. The point is that we all have a mixture of male and female in us, and that's a healthy thing. So looking at the creation processes and applying feminine and masculine symbolism, you can see that one person having a healthy mix of both traits can be both motherly and fatherly. Now, even though we're all capable of being mothers and fathers, I know that those traits don't always come naturally. It wasn't natural for me. I remember when my son was born, I was the most awkward father. I was afraid of putting my son's onesie on him for fear that I'd break him. So I had to learn how to be a dad. So why does it come naturally to some but not others? Well, I think it's about the personality preferences that we have. I remember a class I took many years ago. It was the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator Test. Have you ever heard of it? Okay. So it's an introspective self-report questionnaire designed to indicate psychological preferences and how we perceive the world around us and make decisions. It's based on Jungian psychology, who I'm a big fan of, and it can also be traced back to Plato. So how many of you have ever taken it? It's a lot of you. Awesome. Do you remember what type you are? Okay, cool. We're going to get back to that. So it has four scales, which when combined identify your type. There's the introverted-extroverted scale, which indicates whether you prefer getting energy from social interaction or by being alone. The intuitive sensing scale, which indicates what information you trust more, hard information or intuitive information. Then there's the judging perceiving scale, which indicates whether you like to be more organized or more spontaneous. And the fourth is the thinking feeling scale, which describes whether you like to make decisions based purely on logic or by empathizing with the situation. But it's important to remember that it describes the preferences of each person, but not their ability. So you take the test, and it will give you a four-letter identifier that says what kind of personality you have. And there are 16 personality types, and they all have names which you would recognize from common job titles. So, you know, some of them are inspector and protector, counselor, healer, architect, champion, provider, teacher, those kinds of things. And some types are found more often in the general population than others. My type is ENTP, which has the title of inventor, and only 10% of the population identifies as that. It basically means that I'm an outwardly facing, intuitive, logical, and spontaneous person. And it does a pretty good job of describing my default preferences for acting and working. So this is sort of my wheelhouse. Things that fall into that are pretty easy for me. But I also have other abilities and strengths that are different from the ENTP type. The personality test describes preference, but not ability. So it's like saying I prefer chocolate. It doesn't say that I don't like or appreciate any other flavor. So how does this relate to parenting? Well, some personality types align better with society's ideals of parenting than others. If you Google Myers-Briggs in parenting, you will see a description of what type of parent you are based on what personality type you have. They make sense. The protector type is known as the natural parent, and the provider is known as the nurturing parent. The inspector is the dutiful parent, and the supervisor is the chief parent. My inventor type is known as the innovative parent. What's interesting is that the personality types aren't equally distributed between men and women. Some types have a higher percentage of women, and some types have a higher percentage of men. So for example, 75% of the protector slash natural parent type are women. So it makes sense to think of that type as being motherly. And 75% of the crafting slash laid back parent type are men. So it makes sense to think of those folks more as fathers. But the most important thing to realize here is that there are women who have more masculine parenting types, just like the laid-back parent, and there are men who have the more feminine parenting types, like the natural parent. So should those men and women who are in the minority for their type embrace that parenting type that might be opposite of their gender, or try to be like the parenting types that are more associated with their gender? Here's another interesting fact about the distribution of personality and parenting types. Roughly half of the US population fits into just four of those 16 possible types. And out of those four types, two of them are more female dominated and two of them are more male dominated. And the top two parenting types, the natural and nurturing parents. And the top male parenting types are the dutiful and chief parents. But what they have in common is that they all have the sensing and judging preferences. This is a big discovery for me. This is considered the guardian temperament. They are the concrete and detail-oriented people. As parents, they tend to be more strict and driven to teach right from wrong. They tend to use more corporal punishment. They emphasize teaching their children to conform to the norms of society, and they're concerned about being great providers for their child. And they may be overprotective when it comes to teaching their children. So that's the teaching preference, or the parenting preference, for half of this country. And you can hear their voices very loudly when it comes to the debates about what the proper way is to parent. As for my personality and parenting type, it's definitely true that I don't fit the standards I just described. I said I'm the innovative parent. So my type says that I'm enthusiastic and encouraging, which is true, that I want my kids' lives to be filled with adventures and experiences which they can learn from. And that's all true, too. But they don't always appreciate that. And it says that my attention can be inconsistent with them because they are competing with other projects that are going on in my life. And that's also sadly true. So for me, parenting is a struggle between balancing my need to be independent and my wish to provide to be a good dad and have a good home for them. I know it's not always the most nurturing parent, but I am supportive. And having just learned that about myself has given me some things to ponder about how to become a better parent. So if you are a parent, it might be interesting for you to understand what your own type is. Consider how it compares with your parenting style, and if there are ways that you can also be a better parent. There's something really important to remember about the personality test, though, and I said it earlier. Even though those tests are good at telling you what comes naturally to you, it doesn't mean that you should or shouldn't become a parent. I remember being reassured at work that my results from taking that test weren't going to be used for job assignments. They weren't going to look for certain personality types for certain kinds of jobs. They understood that even though you may not have a natural gift at something, it didn't mean that you couldn't be good at it. Many skills in life are hard earned by practice and experience. Parenting is definitely one of those. I have friends who are solo parents. So what about them? They have to be both mom and dad all the time. So for them, it would be really good for them to understand what parenting type they are and for them to fully use all the female and male traits that they possess. If they naturally have more traits of one gender than the other, then it might be good for them to develop the skills associated with the other gender so they can also be a well-balanced parent. Now, when my first child, Matthew, was only two, people would compliment my wife and I on how great parents we were because he was such a jolly and easygoing kid. And I remember laughing at the idea of that and explaining to them that it wasn't us teaching him how to be a good kid, it was Matthew who taught us to be good parents. And when my daughter Lizzie was born a few years later, she was a completely different kid, but of course wonderful. And she taught us even more about parenting because she was taught us a different skill set because we had to adjust to her. So I think that there's a family contract that gets created when a family is formed, and it evolves as the family grows. And that contract is based on the gifts and skill sets and parenting types of the parents, and also the needs and personality types of the children. Babies, of course, are very vocal about what their needs are, and the parents have to figure out the best way to meet those needs. And the parents will learn and adapt and change to meet those needs. And as the child grows up, they will know which parent to go to get different needs met, or who in the community to get different needs met. They may know to go to dad to get permission to go out on a date and go to mom for help with schoolwork. They will know who to go to when they scrape their knee and who to go to when they want money for a candy bar. They know, just ask them. And they may go to dad for some things considered motherly, and they may go to mom for some things considered fatherly. Each family is completely unique in that, and that's as it should be. So who did you go to for your nurturing? Who mothered you over your life? I look back over my own life, and I tried to see what kind of parenting types my folks were, and they were surprisingly easy to identify. My mom is the generous parent who really is generous and aims to please. And she loves to smother and is always concerned about my well-being. But she often uses guilt to try to get me to do what she wants me to do. She was a wonderful nurturer growing up, and she is still a very caring person. Now my dad, he was the logical parent. He always did his own thing, but he did things with me too. He was never very expressive with his emotions, but he was always content with his kids leading their own lives, and he always respected my choices. So I always went to dad when I wanted something, because I knew he would listen to my rational arguments for what I wanted. So, but outside of my parents, my male and female teachers and my male and female teachers and coaches mothered me and gave me lots of tough love. And then my bosses too. Much of my career growth has been closely related to my personal growth. And I have my male and female bosses to thank for nurturing me. My close friends nurture and support me as well. And of course, my wife, who knows me better than anyone and insists that she doesn't want to mother me, still supports me and keeps me grounded in reality. And I cannot forget my church community. I can't imagine a more nurturing group of people who have been so supportive and mothering to me and my family. And I can see that here as well, that this is a very nurturing community. Well, that's my list. What's yours? This, above any other day, is a perfect day to ponder and appreciate who mothered you growing up and who still mothers you. So one of the challenges in parenting is to recognize and appreciate that there are many ways to be a mother and a father and not force standards onto others. I see stories in the media every day about the different ways to parent, and every one of them seems to bring out passionate critics and supporters of whatever the parenting topic is. Again, one of the big takeaways from the Myers-Briggs class I took years ago was that even though it's really cool to have validation for how your wonderful own personality style is and what it is and how it works, the most important thing is to appreciate the styles of the other people and to learn how to communicate and work with them better. It was important to realize that not everyone is just like me, and I shouldn't expect them to act or think like me. Well, that's very true for parenting. We should appreciate all the ways that people can be mothers and fathers and support everyone's efforts. Now, one last thing before we wrap this up. And that's the understanding that even though men have the same potential as women to be motherly, it doesn't mean that we always participate in the fullest. Or maybe that's just me. One of my core beliefs is that life should be fair and relationships should be balanced. In my own family, my wife and I both have careers, and even though we are both good, we have a good parenting partnership, I acknowledge that I do let her take the lead in maintaining the home and family. So my Mother's Day gift to my wife and to my kids is to be more consistently engaged. And maybe that's something that the dads out there can think about as well. So on this Mother's Day, let us appreciate the motherly and fatherly tendencies in each of us, understanding what they lend to our individual styles, and that there is more to discover and learn. Each one of us can use their natural parenting preferences and develop additional skills to create, nurture, and provide for our precious creations. On this day, let us also acknowledge everyone who has ever mothered us and thank them for their care. Love, care, and nurturing belong to everyone. May it be so.